Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I like the quietness of, okay. of just getting on with stuff. So I wouldn't have music in the background. But I do jump up and down before
yes,
I start, particularly when I do
really
classes.
Have...
Hello, everybody, and Merry Christmas, and welcome to another episode of the Bakedown Podcast. I hope everybody is having a lovely holiday, a lovely festive season. I am Sarah. I'm going to be hosting today, and with me, as always, we have the lovely Howard, Jane, and Dan, and we're going to be covering the Bake Off Christmas episode. Now, this was a very special episode, not only because we had six bakers, where we usually have four, but there was somebody very special in it. Who could that be?
He's very special, isn't it?
Thank you, Jane.
Sorry.
Always supporting me. I appreciate that.
But now this is the hat trick. We've had Howard, Jane, and now we've had Dan in the Christmas tent. Dan, how did it go? How do you feel it went?
Well, why don't we discuss it as the episode goes on? No, it was very nice to be back. To be honest, I wasn't really expecting to ever go back. But yeah, it was a super fun experience. And the only thing that it was really missing was the lovely Jane and Howard. It would have been lovely. We have talked on the podcast. We'd love to go back and do one together. Jane mainly just so she can beat us and get another victory under our belt. Yeah.
Of course.
That would have been lovely. But as a second best, I'll take the Christmas special with one person from each of the other Channel 4 years. So that's what they did. They had Sophie from the year before. Then it was me. Then it was Amelia. Then it was, oh goodness, who was next? Linda?
Yeah, I would say Linda.
Then George, then Carol. Yeah.
So, yes, we had the lovely Sophie Faldo, who was the 2017 winner from Series 8. We had Dan, who was in Series 9 in 2018.
Who was in Series 9, yeah.
Yes, we had Amelia Le Bruin from Series 10.
The star of Series 9. Yeah.
That's more like it. Howard, you should do these announcements.
Oh, I'm out of a job here. We had Amelia Le Bruin, who was from Series 10 in 2019, Linda Rayfield from Series 11 in 2020, George Aristidou, I hope I've got that right, from Series 12 in 2021, and lovely Compost Carol Edwards from Series 13 of 2022. So Howard, what did you think of the episode overall?
I thought it was lovely, but I mean, Dan said it would be nice to bake with me and Jane. But yeah, you were at a bit of a disadvantage, weren't you? The new year is easier to win, isn't it? If you've only got four bakers, odds on, you've got a better chance. But yeah, six is quite a few to go into the tent. But
it is. I have to say, we walked into the hotel and there was someone said, you assumed there were going to be four people. And one of the production staff said, oh, there's going to be six this year. And I thought, oh, that's my chance of winning. And then And then Sophie Faldo walked into the hotel and I was like, oh no! It's gone down again! Going into it, I knew that it was, certainly wasn't a foregone conclusion that I was going to win this one, sadly.
Oh.
But you did say you were a little bit starstruck by seeing Sophie.
Yeah. Well, she won it the year before I went into the tent. So it was kind of, she was sort of the reigning champion. And I know, it's been a while, 6 years now. Maybe people won't remember her, or maybe certainly the newer fans won't remember her. But I certainly did.
You had the advantage as well of meeting a lovely Alison, didn't you? So it's like,
I loved Alison. Yeah! And I have to say, so I can't discuss when we filmed it, but I met Alison a while ago. I was, couldn't say anything, obviously, but I wanted to tell everyone how amazing Alison was and how much I loved her. And I've had to wait until quite recently to do that. So that's been a shame. But no, I love Alison. I think she's amazing. And I did sort of go up to her in the tent and I just said, listen, I just know everyone's going to love you. You're going to, for real, like you're going to be so popular. The public will love it. You're brilliant. Such a great addition to the tent. And she was just sort of very sort of polite and yes, thank you very much. But like, I could just tell instantly that she was going to be really, really good for the show. So yeah, it was lovely, lovely to meet her.
Wow.
Oh, and she has been a breath of fresh air. She's really enlivened it. It needed something like that. It needed a wee bit of a shot in the arm, I think, because only 14 series just needed a bit of a lift, and she was the lift it needed. I didn't really know much about her because she does a lot of daytime telly, doesn't she? So, and I don't watch a lot of daytime telly, but oh, she's just wonderful. I can't wait to meet her, and if I will. No, she's lovely, and I'm glad she's as nice in real life as we think she is on the telly, Dan. So it's a good insight.
Yeah, I think one thing is, like, when Noel comes around, he's very funny, but he comes around to do his little bits, do you know what I mean? But Alison, it just seems like a genuine expression of care when she comes around to see you. She's like, how are you doing? How are you getting on? And even though she's not sort of prepared a hilarious bit, like, she's just sort of, it feels like she actually cares about the Bakers, and I think that was really nice.
Mm.
So there was a nice touch, and you can tell when someone actually cares, and Alison definitely actually cares. So yeah, I've got nothing but positive things to say about Alison.
Aww.
How lovely. How
fantastic.
Lovely.
Well, let us start off then with our Christmas episode. This was, as we've said, the Ghosts of Baker's Past. Which sounds, it's meant to sound more Dickens than like a haunting, given that it's Christmas. But yes, somebody from each of the years that it has been on Channel 4, or for anybody who doesn't watch it on British television, for every year that Prue has been a judge in the tent.
Yeah.
So our signature challenge was 12 decorated mince pies. Any pastry could be used, but the filling must use festive flavours that have good festive memories. And this was a 2-hour challenge. And this sounds really weird to then be reeling off, like, Dan made and you're right here. So this is going to be a bit of an odd podcast today. But Dan, let's start off with you then. Mince pies, how did you feel about this? A good classic challenge.
Yes, I mean, it's a very classic Christmassy challenge, isn't it? I think we all like mince pies, or certainly those of us above a certain age like mince pies. Yeah, so I thought it was great. And I'm only a little bit annoyed that more of me making them didn't get into the show, because obviously, like, we know what you did. And they were like, I used Portuguese custard tart tins because they gave them a really nice shape and I was able to get them out easily. And I thought they would show that, because I thought it was a really good trick to help get really beautiful mince pies, and they didn't even show that I'd used those tins. I was like, oh. So there's, that was the only bit I was annoyed about. It's just that sometimes the things that you want the public to see, or you want people to see, are not the bits that get included, and that's a bit annoying. Because I was so proud of how they turned, like, visually, how they all looked out and everything, and they didn't really show that at all. So I was like, oh, okay, fair enough.
Well, Dan, this is your time to tell us what you did that didn't make the edit. This is your time.
I just guess it's more interesting watching people struggling to get their pastry out of tins than it is to watch someone, just sort of taking things
do
out
it really well.
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't do the whole thing really well, obviously, which we'll get on to. But yeah, that we had a couple of people have problems with really short, crumbly pastry, which I thought was a curious mistake to make. I don't know. It's not a mistake that I usually make. If anything, my pastry is more likely to be on the tough side.
Yeah, ditto. Unless I'm making or trying to make a gluten-free one, and then it gets quite crumbly simply because I haven't put... I think you say put some egg white in or egg in, don't you, Howard? So that would be the only time. But normally shortcrust, a rich shortcrust, should be really quite stable but still quite lovely. So, yeah, I was quite surprised that they struggled. But tell me, Dan, I want to know how you made those cherries, because we didn't see how you did. Did you pipe them? How did you do that? Because they looked very... cartoon cherry-like, which I thought was charming, absolutely charming.
So I just had like a cherry cookie cutter, and I made a pastry hat that was shaped like the cherries and had the indentation of the pattern in, and then I just went over them in royal icing that was flavoured with almond, which they didn't eat, but they just picked it off and put it to one side. I was like, that would have added to the flavour. But I was really happy with how they turned out visually, but the judges did not love them, and that was frustrating. And I'll tell you why. Because, for two reasons. First of all, most of the stuff I made in the tent, they have liked. So it's just annoying that on this occasion, the thing that I thought was delicious, they didn't think was delicious. But also, I tried them on people at home. And we sort of said, like, you know, I made a few varieties. And I said, like, which one do you like the best? And everyone agreed that was the one I liked the most. And everyone that I shared them with agreed that was the best one. And then when I got home again, I was like, I'm sure they were delicious. And I made them again and still thought they were delicious. So I don't really know why they didn't like them. They just said, I think they said they were sort of a bit one-dimensional in terms of flavour, which is, you know, they were sort of very cherry-y, I'll give you that. But yeah, it was a shame, because I was really happy with them, and they didn't love them. Sad.
But I think mince pies are a little bit one-dimensional. I mean, mine are very citrusy, I think, because I put quite a lot of citrus in my mincemeat. And they may be... So do you put some sort of cherry liqueur into it, didn't you? Is it a...
Yeah.
They saw that. And in their heads, they thought, because I hate sort of cherry liqueur chocolates and things like that. Cherry liqueur.
Oh, I love those. See, that's the difference in you and me, Jane.
I don't like that. And maybe they saw that, and actually, that was what was in their head rather than what they were eating. I don't know. I thought they looked absolutely delightful. I really did. I thought they were a lovely idea. So what else? What other fruit? Well, it comes to strawberry and cherry in there, was it?
No, it was sultanas, you know, raisins, currants, citrus peel, and then there were morello cherries, and then some amarena cherries, and then the cherry liqueur. But it's a maraschino, so it's made with the kernels rather than being cherry.
Oh, I love a maraschino cherry. I love that flavour.
In my mind, it was great, and in my mouth, it was great, but they didn't love it. So, I don't know.
I think you said you were gutted, is what you said.
Yeah, well, it's just, the thing is, I thought, you know, when you go back in, you obviously hope that you will do well. And it was something that I thought was really delicious, but they didn't agree. But I tasted a couple of other people's and they were delicious, you know, so maybe they were just, it was a very high standard and they didn't think they were as special as some other ones. Do you know whose were really delicious? Amelia was just behind me and I ate those. They don't seem to like us eating each other's food in the tent, but Amelia's were lovely. I think she struggled a little bit with the appearance, and I think she was getting herself quite wound up that they weren't as beautiful as they might have been, but they were absolutely delicious. Really, really nice.
Yeah, she'd use that aroma di panettone, hadn't she? Which I think we probably say very similarly, because we're in aroma di panettone. But it does sound quite nice, actually. Yeah, well, I've seen it advertised, and it does sound nice.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I hadn't heard about it, actually.
I have it. I quite often use it to flavour the filling for macaron. And it's just sort of citrusy and vanilla-y and a little bit spicy, a little bit cinnamony, maybe. It's just sort of general panettone loveliness. Oh. I don't know. It's sort of hard to describe.
I must get some, actually, because I love a panettone. They don't make a gluten-free one, sadly. She put prunes in hers, Amelia, though, didn't she? Because she was saying they were a bit like slugs, I think, or something
like
that.
Such a charming turn of phrase.
Yes,
yeah.
I do love prunes. I thought that looked delicious, actually, but pastry was a bit thick, I think.
A little thick. Yeah.
So this was Amelia's lovely panettone pastry. She had a spiced apple mincemeat with some prunes or slugs, depending on your point of view. And she had some, I think they were rather pretty star decorations. I don't think they were, I mean, they might have been a tad rough and ready, but I don't think it was that bad.
Oh, no.
I think it was the pastry, actually. I think it was the pastry. Every single one of us, from memory, had like positives and then at least one sort of negative. So I think it wasn't a signature. Oh, maybe Carol had only positive. I think Carol had very. She had the tropical one, didn't she? And that
yeah,
she
too
that
much
got
crumble.
Very
no, she
fever.
Had too much crumble.
Yeah,
she had too much
yeah.
crumble. Ah. Hers. I think Sophie was the only one that didn't have a negative. I think.
Wait, were you kicking your... Well, you wouldn't know, would you, Dan? When you turned up with this lovely idea for cherry and almond and then Sophie's doing something very similar.
And also
I thought you
George.
Just put
and
two
George.
Fingers up at me. Then.
Oh, no. I was saying two other bakers. It seems a lot of people like cherry and almond. It seems like it's quite a classic sort of Christmassy kind of flavour. So, yeah, not too surprising, I suppose.
Can I just say one thing?
Always.
When I think it was Alison said something about, oh, are you worried about the people behind you? She went, you would have said, yes, of course, because they're all great bakers. You would say that,
yeah.
wouldn't you? You
something
wouldn't
like
say,
that, yeah.
no idea how good these guys are, meaning they could be crap. And I thought, that was perhaps not, that she, you know, maybe the diplomacy course didn't work.
Well, maybe she hadn't watched Bake Off since she was on it. Maybe she thought, now I've been on it, the show's peaked. It's all
maybe,
downhill from here.
Maybe. I just wrote it down and thought, okay, even if you don't think it, you say it, don't you? Because it's like judging a kid's cake competition. When something looks like a car crash, you go, well done. You know, it looks fabulous. And,
I can see how hard you worked on it.
Yes, I can see how hard you worked. And you just do, don't you? And I would have thought, I no idea how good these guys are. Yes, you do.
They made it onto the show just like you.
Sorry, Sophie, if you're listening. I just thought that was a bit. Yeah, I've seen
or
them.
Maybe
I know. No
I was going to say, maybe she had seen them, so she was like, "Yeah, I can beat these
guys." Maybe. Yeah, like, I am the only finalist here, duh.
Yeah, of course it's me. Yeah.
Well, what did we think of Linda's mince pies? She had a traditional mince pies, and that's all that was said. I assume that was the classic currants and raisins fillings and a traditional sort of nice shortcrust pastry. But she had these 3D marshmallow snowmen on the top. Would you want a big bite of marshmallow with your mince pie, Howard?
Not me personally. No, because I think the kind of the way that a mince pie is constructed, you do want that kind of mouthfeel, don't you? You want to bite into it and get either a crumbly or frangipan topping or a pastry topping and the filling and the pastry on the bottom. But you've got to with Linda, you've got to kind of bite through that marshmallow first. Haven't you?
You'll have to like bite the whole mouthful of marshmallow off first before you can eat it normally, won't you?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I thought they were great.
They look lovely.
In terms of their appearance.
Yeah.
They look lovely. And do you know what else is lovely? Linda. Such a sweet woman. I love Linda a lot. Like, they're all lovely, obviously. But Linda was sort of very, like, motherly and very kind. And I really, really like Linda. I liked her on a series, and she's exactly the same in real life. Just a real sweet, lovely woman. So I've got a lot of time for Linda. Really, really nice. But yeah, I think she had a couple of problems. She had the crumbly pastry. And I'm not quite sure how you would have eaten it. But I thought visually, like, for TV, it looked great. And she had some positive comments as well. I think they really loved the flavour of that as well. And the marshmallow was complimented too. So I think, although it's not exactly what I would have attempted or the style I would have attempted, I thought it was good and, you know, obviously tasted lovely. So I think Linda did a good job.
I thought they were delightful and they said the flavours were lovely. The thing is with a challenge like this, I don't decorate my mince pies. I'll put a star on. I'll maybe put a crumble topping on. But I think that the pastry, as you were saying, Howard, it's the balance between the pastry and the sweet filling. And I would not decorate my mince pies in any way other than pastry or crumble or frangipan with some almonds on the top. Or
a sprinkle of icing sugar.
A sprinkle of icing sugar or a drizzle of icing if I was making a frangipan topping one just to give it a little bit of something. I wouldn't cover one with a load of fondant. So for me, Sophie's ski-themed ones, which... Oh, God, I'm not really knocking Sophie because she's perfectly lovely. I just thought they were a bit boring, the top, although they seem to love them. You know, I wouldn't put a great lump of fondant on the top, because there's enough sweetness in the filling. You don't need that. And I thought, we do things when we're given a challenge like this, we do things that are going to look visually really interesting that we probably would never do at home because of the balance, and the marshmallow being one of them, that too much sugar. However, to tick the brief, which is sort of highly decorated mince pies, I thought it was genius. I thought the marshmallow snowman was a fantastic idea, and they looked lovely. So sometimes we forget that they're told to decorate these things. Do you remember when they had to decorate brownies a couple of years ago in the series, and they were absolute disaster?
Ridiculous.
Ridiculous. You do not need to cover some of these things. What do they call them? Gild the lily. You don't need to do that. So, although it may not be something I would have chosen to eat, I thought for this challenge, Linda's idea was the best one there. But present company accepted with your delicate cherry.
Of course, it goes without saying.
It goes without saying.
For the rest of the episode, it goes without saying.
Yes. I thought it was genius. And pity about the pastry, because I thought it was a lovely, lovely idea. But I would like to say about Amelia, because I was all the way through going, she strips the paper in the tin, helps you lift them out, because that's what we do all the time.
I wrote that down.
And strips the paper really helps you get them out, because if you're sticky mince meat.
I knew you'd bring that up, James.
I knew you knew and all that. But to see Amelia do it was like, yes, I mean, it was fantastic.
The technique lives on.
But anybody who doesn't make mince pies or anything with a sticky filling or anything that's difficult to get out, or you haven't got a loose bottom tin, just to lift them out. And mince pies especially, because once that sticky stuff cools a bit and sticks to the side of the tin, it's impossible to get them out without sort of running a knife around it and wrecking your pastry. So anybody, you know, use those strips of paper to get out any pies out of those little tins, because it was brilliant. And good on you, Amelia. I was delighted to see you do that. A woman after my own heart.
For anybody that's done any Bake with a Legend classes, or for any hosts that have watched lots of Bake with a Legend classes, you definitely pick up on people's individual techniques. And then when you do them yourself, you're like, Jane would be so proud of me. Or how would be so proud of me that I'm doing this? When I made my mince pies the other day, I was like, cut out the strips, line the thing. And I was like, oh God, Jane would be so proud of me as I took them out. So it works.
We can't go on without mentioning your mince pie.
No, your mince pie.
Come
Sarah,
on, you've got to say, yay!
I'm
mince
so
pie
proud.
Expert. Yeah.
Well, I entered a very, very prestigious, very prestigious, very hugely famous, not remotely famous at all. My local pub had a mince pie bake-off at the beginning of December. I entered mine and I came second, which I was very, very proud of.
And do you want to tell everybody what you made? Because they looked delightful. They really did.
I feel like you're all proud parents. So like, now tell me what you made. Well, I'm not a fan of mince pies. I don't like the raisins. For some reason, raisins and me just don't agree all that much. So I did apple, apricot and cranberry, and I put like all the orange and cinnamon in there, and I used browned butter for the pastry, which is a revelation. I'll be doing from now on. It was absolutely fantastic. And yes, a crumble topping as well, because I had no idea how to decorate them, but I thought, make it look purposefully messy and I'll be fine.
Always a good
tip.
So
that
tip,
crumble topping was the way. I know.
And with a bit of gold on the top. So again, a woman after my
and the gold
heart,
glitter.
With some gold glitter on the
Yay!
Top.
Yay! It's Christmas, so why not? So yes, I didn't win anything, but I got the pride of saying I came second.
They looked lovely.
Fun.
I thought they looked...
That was fun.
The nicest in the picture of ones two and three. So yes,
thanks.
Well done.
So we're all winners of something here, aren't we?
We are.
Fabulous. So yes, that was our signature challenge, with everybody doing really well. I don't think anybody had, even the people that struggled with the pastry didn't have a complete disaster. Everybody had good flavours, good looks, good pastry. So still anybody's game at this point, all to play for. Now, the technical challenge this year was a cinnamon snowflake bread, and this was sort of an enriched dough in a sort of a tear and share style with a cinnamon sugar filling, which was a 2-hour and 45-minute challenge. Now, Dan, there was some lovely shots of everybody's confused faces as Alison and Noel were announcing what the challenge was. Was this a sort of challenge that you just really couldn't see it until you started twisting it?
Well, actually, there was a trend for this a couple of years ago or a few years ago, but I couldn't remember how they made them. And they said, I don't remember if it made the edit, but they said, you know, shaping is the hard bit kind of thing. And I looked at the instructions and I thought, oh, the shaping sounds really easy. And then I got the shaping wrong. So, yeah, it was trickier than I expected. I think you were supposed to put the circle cutter in the middle and then, like, cut the strips, you know, cut around it, but not actually push the cutter down. You know, the cutter was a guide, and I didn't get that memo. I just pushed the cutter straight down and then was like, oh no, I don't think it's supposed to have a hole there. So, yeah, whoopsie. But it was just bread at the end of the day, wasn't it? It's just bread. We know sort of roughly what we're looking at. I think, Jane, you'd have been all right in this one, wouldn't you? You've done something like this
absolutely
before.
I would, actually. When I first came off Bake Off and do food festivals, it was one of the things that I used to make and demonstrate at food festivals, because, you know, you'd bring along to a food festival one that was proved, one that, you know, food festivals are about, you know, here's some I prepared earlier, and I used to do savory ones. So layer it with homemade pesto or sun-dried tomato paste and something like that. They were lovely. And it is delicious, and it looks fabulous, you know, even if you don't quite get the twisting right. And if you've done it before, it's one of those things that if you've done it before, you can do it with your eyes shut. And if you've never done it before, it must be very difficult to work out what you're supposed to do from written instructions, because you have to visualise it. But somebody did it 2 or 3 years ago, certainly while we've been doing it.
Michael Chakraverty.
He did it, didn't he? He did savoury star bread and the judges went wild. So, yes, it was something that was probably 3 or 4 years ago, maybe slightly longer, and very, very popular. And then everybody goes, oh, been there, done that. And so this group of bakers may not have done it before. But I think it's lovely and it looks super for Christmas. And it doesn't have to be cinnamon. It can be savoury. It can be anything you like. You could stick, I think, Nutella. Some people put Nutella in it and do it the same way as we do a puff pastry Christmas tree. You know, it's just a bit of very, very clever twisting that makes it look absolutely stunning. So it's worth giving it a go, guys. Anybody listening that fancies doing it, there are some very good YouTubes and things you'll find on the web, and make one for Christmas, because it'll knock people's socks off. And you can do it with puff pastry as well. So if you don't want to make the bread, but it's lovely, absolutely lovely.
It was definitely a very nice challenge, a very, very festive and very accessible as well. I love that they're continuing the accessibility theme throughout the Christmas challenges. Mince pies, something we've all heard of, even if we don't like, you know. Carol had like a tropical fruit one, so that's like, oh, I can get into mince pies that way. A nice bread, you know, as Jane said, you could just get a jar of Nutella and some dough. You don't need lots of ingredients and you can make something pretty. I actually saw this on TikTok about 3 days after I watched the burger. I was like, oh, there it is.
Yes.
So I was like, I know how to do it now. So there we go.
So I thought this was hilarious. So when you're all messing about, you and Amelia made me laugh so much, because you were like, you know, I'm not quite sure about this. Is this right? And she said, if it looks like a vagina, it's right. And you said, I've never seen a vagina. Sorry. It made me laugh so much.
True story.
I must say, I feel sorry for your daughter when she hits puberty, if that's your attitude.
In fairness, when Cods has asked me questions like that, I'm like, should we Google it together?
Yeah.
It's a nice bonding experience.
Yay!
Oh dear.
But Alison goes to give you a hug. She said, Do you want a hug? And it was the most awkward on screen hug I have ever seen. It was do we go cheek to cheek? Where do we go? I've written most awkward hug ever! !! I thought it was so funny.
She was pulling me over. Yes, she was comforting me from the morning. I think she thought I'd gone and had a cry in the toilets, but no, that was on my first season, not on the Christmas special. Yeah.
Well, I thought George was funny. George made me laugh because he obviously didn't use all his dough and he was rolling it out, cutting it off. And he said, well, if it's smaller, it proves faster, or words to that effect. No, it doesn't. Just because the yeast... yeast goes, oh, there's not much of me. I better actually go a little bit faster. It doesn't go faster. I think he was joking, wasn't he?
It's the sort of thing you say because you think it makes sense, and then you're like, no, that doesn't make sense, does it?
No.
I think at the time I was like, yeah, totally agree. And I was like, oh, no, wait, no, that doesn't make sense.
Does it?
I do see his point. Now, Howard, do you think this sort of technical challenge is, I don't want to say fair, because I think all the technical challenges test something, but this sort of technical challenge where the technique itself is pretty simple, but the challenge rests on kind of whether you shape it correctly, like whether you have the vision to shape it correctly? Because I think we've discussed this before. Do you think that's a fair technical challenge, or it should be more focused on like the technique of actually making something?
I think it is reasonably fair. I mean, sometimes I've said, you know, if you were actually doing this from a kind of cookbook or whatever, it probably would have an illustration in there. Although I've done, there are certain Scandinavian cookbooks that just leave you, you know, to your own devices. You think, well, it's okay showing me what the finished thing looks like, but how I actually shape it to get it to look like that is another matter. Mm. So I think it was reasonably fair. And actually, generally, I think the judges were sort of fairly nice, weren't they? They sort of, I don't think they necessarily thought he had to look like the kind of exemplary one, as long as it was neatly done and had some twists in it. So I think, like snowflakes, there's a bit of variety, isn't there?
Each snowflake is different.
It is.
Unique. Yeah, good. I think they try and make something very Christmassy, don't they? We did, for our Christmas episode, we had to do some really difficult cutting of these very strange Scandinavian, I'm not quite sure what they were now, it was like almost like pancake, or they were almost like Scandinavian poppadoms in a way, and we had to cut them in a very, very complicated way. But I don't think anybody minded. I mean, it was a puzzle how to do it. But actually, it was Christmas, and they were snowflakes, and they were lovely, and if you were Scandinavian, you'd know how to do them. So we don't mind as long as it's very Christmassy, I don't think. Mm. And the judges are always nice on these festive episodes, aren't they? Even Paul.
I think they are a bit nicer. A little bit. Well, it's also, there's not the drama of anyone going home, is there? Or as we said, you know, everyone's going home. So it doesn't, they don't need to point out if someone's done badly. They just need to point out if someone's done well, you know. So that's kind of nice.
Yeah, I think so too.
It must be quite nice for the judges as well, because they can just enjoy and pick the winner. They don't have to scrutinise everybody and say, well, they did better than that and that did better than that. Oh, so I think that person would have to go home. They can just be like, this is fun.
Yeah.
So it must be actually quite a let off the pressure for the judges as well.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed Carol, bless her. The instructions were twist away from each other. So and so she sort of twisted
she
them
was wrapped
together.
Around.
I was like, no, Carol, away. And it must be one of those things, you just read the words and it just doesn't compute in your head in that moment. Yeah. And we've all been there. But I was just sitting there going, no, Carol, away. Oh, bless.
I have to say, when I misunderstood the instructions, because I pushed the cutter down the middle and my ends didn't really stick together because I didn't really understand how they were supposed to stick, so they came apart. And I was like, oh, I'm sure the bread will be nice because I'm good at making bread. So I thought technically the bread would be fine, but I was like, I've really messed up that shaping. And then Carol's put hers down on the table. And I was like, oh, thank God. Because she'd cut out the middle like I had, but then she'd made triangles and just thrown the triangles back in the middle. And then the twist was weird. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I haven't got as confused as Carol did, bless her. But they were all different. Like, all the bakes were different. But you know who I thought did a really good job and maybe didn't get quite the kudos they should have got was, I thought Amelia's was lovely, and I think Amelia knew how to shape it exactly, but hers was really pretty, and I don't really know what they found fault with on that one, because I thought hers was great, so I don't know.
They said it was not consistent. Oh, I don't know, that was just what they said, so perhaps it just rose slightly differently in one bit of the snowflake to the other, but I thought it looked lovely as well. I think she did really well, Amelia.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I don't know why she didn't rank higher. And Linda's, I think they said it was a little bit dried out, a little bit overbaked, but hers was the most beautiful. Hers was absolutely lovely. Yeah. And I thought Linda was going to win, and I was shocked she came fourth, actually. But obviously, I didn't taste the bread. I guess it was a bit dry, a bit overbaked, maybe. Mm. Yeah. Oh, sorry, I'm talking about rankings already, Sarah. Sorry, I'm treading on the toes yet again.
No, it's fine. It was a perfect segue into the rankings. Absolutely. So Carol came sixth in this challenge. I think all over the place was something that was a phrase that was used. And the middle shouldn't have been cut out. So, Dan, I'm surprised you did well. So well, considering your middle was cut out as well.
I know, right?
George came fifth. Instead of rolling his discs out to circles, he rolled out square discs and then cut circles out of the middle. I was like, oh, George.
What a waste of dough.
I know. But a tad heavy on the cinnamon as well. But it was apparently that was very uniform as well. So he got fifth place. Linda, as we've said there, came fourth with a very good shape, but slightly dry and slightly overbaked. Third was Amelia, who had shaping not bad. And from the sounds of it, the shaping was very, very nice. But she had good texture, good flavour, and it seemed quite close between the top three spots. Dan, obviously, you got second.
I did.
And you got quite neat and well risen. Good soft bread, good flavour. So well done, Dan. You have good bread.
Thanks, babe.
And Sophie was first. Very beautiful, accurate shaping of the loaf with good colour. And there we are, our cinnamon bread challenge.
Dan, when he was being interviewed, went, I'm very happy with second, very happy with second. And I said, just keep repeating it, Dan, and you might actually
be a little bit. No. The opposite. I was expecting to come third or fourth in that challenge. I thought, wow. From looking at them, I thought Amelia's was better than mine, and I thought Linda's was better than mine as well. So it was only when they tasted them, they were like, okay, this is better texture or whatever. I thought I was going to be third or fourth.
Oh, okay.
No, I was happy to be second.
So it was pure relief.
Morning. Yeah, it was, because I didn't have the best morning. And then I don't think I was like bottom of the pile in that sense, but it was, you know, it wasn't the glowing morning that I wanted. And then to come second technical, I was like, okay, I'm fine now. I'm not bumping along the bottom, you know, so that's good. All good.
Well, now it is time for some of your lovely questions. And thank you so much to everybody who has written in with some fantastic questions over this series. We have loads and loads of questions. So we have a couple of questions to answer here. Now, the first one is from Das from Sydney. So hello there.
Oh, hello.
And so Das's question is, with regards to dietary restrictions, are there certain foods that are off limits to all contestants on account of potential allergies on any season? Like if someone's allergic to nuts? Well, I know definitely that Rosie is allergic to nuts, Rosie Brandreth, one of our legends. And I believe the technicals that year didn't have any nuts in, so she didn't have to handle them. But people definitely still use nuts in the tent across the season. I don't think you can stop people using things. What do you think?
I never had any restrictions. What about you, Howard?
I don't think so. I don't think we. But it's an interesting question. If there was somebody who made it through to the kind of final group of breakers in the tent, I'm pretty sure they would have to make some adjustments, wouldn't they, in order for that to happen? I'm thinking of there are differences, aren't there, between when it's a kind of matter of literally life and death and when there are kind of cultural choices or religious choices or things like that.
Or just intolerances, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, if someone doesn't eat meat, would they be made to make a steak and kidney pudding as a technical? I don't know. I don't know, is there?
Well, this goes back to Freya, who was vegan in series 12, I think. I don't think the technicals were all vegan, so she had to use the non-vegan ingredients. But the only thing I can think of is Rosie, because people definitely used nuts in their signature and showstoppers in her season, but none of the technicals had nuts. So Rosie herself didn't have to touch them, because whenever we have nuts in any of our bakes, obviously she doesn't include them. But there were nuts around in the tent, so I don't know if she had to be away from people who were using nuts or something like that. I don't know. Mm. Jane, do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, I just assume that if it is something that could be a matter of life and death, we were never told to avoid certain things, and I assume all the judges are fine with everything. You know, some shows you'll find one of the judges is allergic to shellfish, so somebody else comes in and tastes it. But I don't think any of the judges do. And we've never been told to avoid it. So you are far enough away from other people that if you don't touch their bench or shake their hands, you're probably absolutely safe from nuts and dairy and all that sort of stuff. So I think if they know somebody has an allergy, yes, I think they would avoid something that, like nuts in a technical, if somebody has a serious allergy. Mm. And that would be very sensible of them, and I don't think that's a problem. But as far as restricting us, we were never restricted.
Well, thank you very much, Das, for that question. I hope we've had a reasonable guess at answering that one for you. And we have another question here from Colin. Hello, Colin. And Colin says that the tips that we share on the podcast are really helpful. He says some advice that we can keep in the back of our heads and say, oh, I can fix that, instead of panicking when the situation arises. So Colin says thank you to you guys for all your lovely tips and tricks that we mentioned on the podcast. So I'm glad somebody's finding things useful.
Oh, can I jump in there? Because I've had lovely message from Stephanie and Savannah, who listens to the podcast and has done classes with us. And she said she did a class during COVID and so appreciated the relief from that difficult time. With the confidence you helped me acquire, I plan to make ladyfingers from scratch this weekend. So it is absolutely lovely that people find what we do, either in classes or on here, helpful and enjoyable and a relief from whatever's going on outside. And she was the one who sent a picture of the Betty Crocker moist cake mix. This was 2 or 3 years ago, I think.
Yes.
But she also, thank you so much, Stephanie, for this. Apparently, there is now a reusable stretch wrap, because she knows that I absolutely hate cling film, but it's not yet available over here. But apparently, WNP reusable stretch wrap is one of the best innovations, one of the 200 best inventions of 2023. So Stephanie, thank you so much for getting in touch and doing classes and joining in, because we love that. Thank you, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you so much, everybody who listens in, who writes in, who takes classes with us. It's absolutely fantastic, and we wouldn't be here if it weren't for you guys, so thank you. And yes, back to Colin's question. Colin says, whenever I bake, I always play a specific album by one of my favourite heavy rock bands. I've done this for a few years now. And for the four of you, I'm included in this. This is nice. Do you have any traditions, habits or quirks that you've developed for when you are going to bake? I like that. So do you have any music playing in the background? Do you have a favourite spatula or Howard?
I don't know whether I like music when I'm baking. I like the quietness of just getting on with stuff. So I wouldn't have music in the background. But I do jump up and down before I start, particularly when I do classes.
Yes, no, does.
I know.
He really does.
I do. I'll say to them, I'm just going to jump up and down. So I can't start a class without my little jump up and down before I go.
Oh, it's so sweet. We're like, how are you ready to start? He's like, right, okay. He just does like 2 or 3 little jumps on the spot just to get the energy going. Oh,
I love that.
Yeah, that's completely true. Dan, what about you?
Not really. I tend to listen to classical music when I bake. So there's that. But other than that, no. When I have a menial task to do, for some reason, I really enjoy watching Nigella. So if ever I'm like cutting up peel for marmalade or decorating Christmas cookies, you know, something that just sort of takes a lot of time, I'll have Nigella on in the background and she brings me comfort. I think I want to be Nigella Lawson when I grow up. I think that's what it is.
Yeah,
Howard gets it. Yeah.
Well, the other day I had an emergency. Sarah will know, my Wayne scale stopped working and I had to dash down to Tesco to just get a random set of weighing scales. And I thought, I'll just get a cheap pair of weighing scales. It won't matter. I can always get another pair if they're not great. And then I found out they're the ones that Nigella uses. So I'm thinking, oh, I might keep these now.
How would you know they're not Nigella's herself? They're just as... Jane, what about you? Any habits or rituals for when you're about to bake?
Well, a bit like Dan, really. And I have a wonderful CD. Well, now it's on my Spotify. I'm sure other streaming platforms are available. Which is Christmas in Vienna 3. And they sing the most, it is operatic, but it's absolutely beautiful. And I love it. And it was on telly, 30 odd years ago, probably. And then my brother gave it to me as a gift. And the soprano in it is a Norwegian singer. And that's lovely at Christmas. It only comes out for Christmas baking and mince pies and then present unwrapping on Christmas morning. But I don't head to Nigella when I'm doing something repetitive, I would say. I'm a real Doctor Who fan. I watch the Lord knows how many series of Doctor Who's now, and I sort of get to the end and start back at the beginning again. And it's because it's so familiar, it doesn't matter if I take my eye off it. And each one I go, oh, you're my favourite Doctor Who. No, you're my favourite Doctor Who. So I don't suppose you get Doctor Who in the US. But yes,
I think Doctor Who is very big in the States.
Oh, is it? So yes, I'm a, what do they call them?
Whovians.
Something like that. Anyway, yeah. Big fan.
Well, there we go. Everybody's different baking rituals there, whether we've got Pure Silence or Nigella or Doctor Who playing in the background. We've got something. So thank you very much, Colin, for that question. And yes, please do keep your questions coming in, everybody. We only have our New Year's episode to go before that is it for 2023. But we will have a podcast next year. So please do keep your questions coming in and we shall store them up for next year. You can contact us via social media. We are at Bake With A Legend on all platforms, or you can email us thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com. And now onto our Showstopper Challenge. Now, this was a really nice challenge, I thought. Sort of Christmassy without being too Christmassy, in a way. This was a celebration cake inspired by a bake that has haunted you from your series. So still keeping with the Dickens theme here, which I thought was very sweet. So if there was a particular challenge that people didn't feel they'd done particularly well on, they could revisit that and sort of redeem themselves. This was sort of a redemption bake. And this was a 4-hour challenge. Dan, I just loved the way you were introduced at the beginning. You know, you said they said you were one of the most decorated non-winners in history, which was really, really great. And then afterwards they said, Dan left the tent in week 6 after serving the judges a raw pastry fish.
I know. It just made me laugh. The worst moment. It was dreadful. It was, I think I have to say, Jane wouldn't know because she didn't leave the tent. But I think the thing that sucks about leaving the tent is you always end on a slightly sour note, don't you? Because you're obviously going home because you made something that's a bit rubbish. And just to go home having made that god-awful pastry fish thing, I'm like, did you have to bring that up? That was so unnecessary.
It was just the words raw pastry fish.
Yeah. But that's what it was. It was pretty vile. I couldn't, so it was a redemption bake. I couldn't really redeem that because that was a pastry thing and it was also savoury. So the only thing I could have done was made a cake in the shape of a fish, and decoration in my strong point. So
I don't know.
No.
I mean, you say that, Dan.
It's beautifully decorated.
Oh, well, thank you. One does one's best. But yeah, I couldn't do the fish thing. So I'll do spice week instead, because that's sort of, it was spice, it was all a bit rubbish as well. So yeah, that's what I was redeeming there. So it was a ginger, sort of a spiced pear cake, but sort of ginger is the main flavour, with a pear jam, and also the buttercream, which they did put in the text with Bernoisette buttercream, which I thought was a revelation, and I loved it. And Prue at the time commented on how much she liked it, but they didn't mention anything about it. They didn't show me making it. They didn't mention the taste of it, which I was a bit disappointed. Yeah. Well, just because Prue was quite complimentary, and I was really proud of that, because it's not something that I've seen in many places. I didn't come up with it. I saw it in a cake somewhere and decided to steal the idea. But I thought that was really lovely, and I'm sad they didn't mention it. So, but you got to see the decoration, and that was, I think I was quite happy with the decoration in the end.
It was beautiful.
It was stunning. Yeah. It was absolutely stunning. I loved it, Dan, but you should be really proud. And those pear macarons, I know macarons are your thing. They were gorgeous. It was a work of art. It really was a work of art. And I'm not just saying that because you're my friend. It was absolutely beautiful.
It was gorgeous. It really was.
Aww,
it was absolutely fantastic. And Paul was really complimentary on the macarons as well. As soon as I knew you were doing macarons, I felt really proud. I was like, yes, come on, Dad, you show them. That was fantastic.
Yeah, I can do macaron now. Yeah, one of my things.
And it was really nice to see you in the tent, but it was also very strange because from my point of view, whenever I've watched any of you in the tent, it's all been before this. So then I start hosting. And to be honest, I was a little starstruck when I met all of you guys. It was quite nice. But now, knowing you quite well, Dan, and then seeing you go back in the tent, I felt like it was like, that's my friend. That's my friend. It was really nice. It was a really bizarre experience because I was like, Sophie, she won. And a bit of a starstruck moment. And then it was like, that's my friend, Dan. It was really sweet. So, but yeah, fantastic challenge, Dan. Your cake was absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, thanks.
But Jane, I thought you'd be quite proud of George because his Italian meringue buttercream went a bit soupy, and he went, "I'm going to stick it in the fridge."
Oh yes, but just thank goodness, because it was Matty, wasn't it, in the last series that just kept remaking something. You know, well done, George. Just stick it in the fridge. We all know that you stick it in the fridge, it firms up. Because your meringue is too warm when you add your butter, therefore the butter melts. So as soon as your butter firms up, you're good to go. So good old George. It was lovely to see George in the tent. What a darling he was. And I think on this challenge, he completely overcame what could have been a complete car crash, couldn't it? And you saw at the end, it seemed to suddenly go from being really, really, really messy to looking like a showstopper. I think, going back to what you said, Dan, I think they don't have time to show everything, do they? And it's only once you go back in the tent you realise that they don't have time to show everything. But I just thought he did a great job. Good old George. Well done. Just lovely. And to do a vertical Swiss roll in the time, the amount that you've got to do, I thought was very brave. And I was a bit worried about the overhanging bit about the top. Did he put it on a cake board? I think he must have put it on a cake board, because otherwise that would have all fallen off.
It was on something, yeah.
It must have been on something. Mm. I was a bit worried about it all collapsing. But he did a brilliant, brilliant job. I think everybody did, actually. I thought it was a lovely, lovely challenge.
Yeah, do you know what? I think George was absolutely the star of this episode for me. And I'm not saying that just because I like him. I thought him overcoming a complete meltdown and presenting something that was very presentable was such a great bake-off moment, you know, because nothing ever goes exactly right in the tent. Like, my practice bake was better than the one I made in the tent, you know. And I think I said at one point, you know, it's not brilliant, it's not awful. And then the tent, that's genuinely what we hope for, isn't it? We're just like, if it turns out half decent, it's a win. And I think George's, you know, there were two Christmas trees in the tent. There was Carol and there was George. I thought George was more architecturally impressive because it had sort of the overhang and it looked very realistic. Carol's was decorated maybe more beautifully, more colourfully. But George's had its own things about it that made it great as well. And I love the lights, even though I think Noel said it looked like an illuminated trifle, which I thought was a bit mean.
Well, that's only because they said the middle was like a trifle because it was all a bit mashed up, wasn't it? That's
I think a little compressed.
Yeah.
I did get rather major anxiety with Carol and her dowels. Now, I've never used a dowel in a cake, so I couldn't tell you the best way to use it, but just to watch her pick up the sponge and then put as it started to break, I was like, oh, Carol, what's happening? And it just broke and she just packed it down. I thought, oh, be careful, Carol. Oh, my goodness. That was a stressful moment. But again, hers came off beautifully. Once she'd added all the decorations and the little gingerbread men with the little eyes. It's really sweet, amazing
what you can cover up with a ton of buttercream. It's
glitter, lights, buttercream, just get it all thrown on there.
Absolutely
fantastic. Now, Dan, there was a rather sort of good TV bake-off moment as you put the collar on and it just smudged ever so slightly. But I just, all that was going through my head was, it's fine, Dan. Every cake has a back. Just turn it around.
Yeah. That was a terrifying moment because the thing is, when the collar is on the acetate, you can sort of change it and wipe bits off and redo it if it looks messy. But you only do get one chance to put it on the cake unless you're scraping off the whole thing and starting again. Now, my original plan was to fill in all the space with white chocolate so that it would be a complete collar. And then actually, even if you smudge it around, it doesn't matter because the outside of the collar remains the same. But I ran out of time. There wasn't enough time. So I could have made it neater, but there just wasn't enough time. And sadly, but I think it still came out all right.
Overall effect.
I thought it looked absolutely lovely because your cake was really quite smooth underneath. So it didn't matter at all. But speaking as the person who had so much success with chocolate collars in the tent, you are absolutely right. You know, you can't put it in the fridge because then it sets too hard and you go to put it on and it doesn't bend. And then you're in a rush and it hasn't quite set enough not to smudge. And it's a very tricky thing to do in the tent, actually, as a chocolate collar, and so I say. And because you can't temper the chocolate because it will then crack and it sets too quickly. If you're piping, you can't use it with tempered chocolate because it would set much too quickly. So it's very tricky. And you did a stunning job. I thought it was stunning, Dan. I really, really loved it. It's beautiful. And I'm so pleased for you. You're being very sort of now modest, aren't you? Jolly good. Thank you, Jane. That's how lovely of you to say.
No. I think... The thing is, with TV, the audience can't taste anything. So really all they're going off of is obviously the judging, but how the cake looks as well. And I was pleased that I felt I turned out things that didn't really have any visible errors, if you like. You know, so they at least looked decent on TV, even if the judges didn't love all the flavours or whatever it might be. So I was quite happy with how it turned out. I said it wasn't amazing. It wasn't as good as practice, but it could have been an awful lot worse. And I think that was the theme of that showstopper is everyone was like, it's not amazing. It's not terrible. You know, we've pulled something together. So I think, Amelia, for example, her ganache was a little bit soft, so she struggled with some of her buttercream blobs. But I thought hers was lovely. She was having a bit of a meltdown halfway through. I think it was all going to go horribly wrong, but she turned out something that I thought looked very nice. And also Linda did the lovely shoe swans. They were absolutely beautiful. Yes. I think she did a fantastic job of those. Yeah, I did think I could have done that.
Oh, they were fantastic. Proper shoe redemption there.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah.
Now, Howard, did anybody else's cake really stand out for you?
Well, I think Dan's cake, definitely. Because I think it wasn't just about visually. Actually, the judges loved the flavour as well, didn't they? They said it was a delicious cake. Mm. So I thought you'd got it at that point. Mm. I really did. Excellent.
Well, there's still Sophie to talk about. And so
yes.
So Sophie made a Russian honey cake, which is a very delicious cake. It's sort of one of the classic European torts, and she made it into this sort of towering candle. And then she made some bread that went around the outside. Her bread was a little overbaked, but the judges loved the flavour of it. And I think the taste of the cake combined with the height of it was quite impressive. So I think, as an overall Christmassy presentation, I thought she did a really good job. I mean, it's sort of, you know, it's very easy to pick holes in everything that wasn't perfect, but you could do that for everybody, you know. And it's I thought she did a great job. It was a vision overall, very impressive looking thing.
Yes.
Yes,
I mean, I thought the honey cake in the centre was a towering triumph. I really did. I no way in a million years will I have done a cake of so many layers and having to bake that. I just thought in the time, I know they don't cook for very long, but in the time, it's so much opportunity to go horribly wrong. But visually, it really didn't do it for me. The bread was, to us viewing, did look quite burnt. And the cake itself looked quite boring. I think I would have had to have put a flame on it, or I know she put the tea light in, but even so, it should have been a taller flame. I think I would have put an artificial flame in there. I made one out of fondant or something. White on white didn't give much impact. So I'm sure it tasted delicious, and the technical effort to make that cake, it was astounding. But visually, it really didn't do it for me at all. If she hadn't put a tea light on the top, you wouldn't have known it was a candle, would you?
No, I was thinking a sort of caramel flame or something like that would have.
Yes,
would
that would have worked quite nice.
Isomalt
or something like that would have been much more attractive. So I just thought visually, everybody else's looked nicer than Sophie's. And again, I'm sorry, Sophie, I'm really not picking on you at all, but it just didn't do it for me. I thought Dan had got it at this stage, because he was only a little bit behind after the first two challenges, and I thought he was so far ahead. And I'm not just saying that, Dan, because it's you, darling. I was not impressed, especially when the bread was burnt and it was described as dry and overbaked.
Well, I have to say, I knew that Sophie was ahead in the first two challenges, if you like. But I did think I'd done a good job in the showstopper, and I did think that maybe I had done enough. And that was also magnified by the fact that several people came up to me and were like, oh, you've clearly won, you've clearly won. And I was like, no. But I was sort of adding up in my head, and I'm like, maybe I have won. But I think Sophie obviously had done enough across the three challenges. So, you know, maybe the technical does count sometimes. You never know.
I think Sophie did say she ran out of time and maybe she did plan to do some extra decoration.
She wants to do more, I think,
on the cake. I also thought maybe Linda's was slightly lacking in outside decoration. I thought the shoe swans were beautiful.
Oh, yes,
they
Linda's
were absolutely
probably,
gorgeous.
Yeah.
I was just expecting a little more pizzazz on the outside of the cake,
or a bit more
maybe as well. It was just a little, maybe it was a tad plain. I quite liked the overall idea of Sophie's and the sort of the wreath and the candle, but I think maybe if she'd just been able to finesse it a little bit more, might have just been a little better. But there we go.
Well,
as we say,
we judge on ideas, do we? Because we all have great ideas and go into the tent, and you can't go, it was dreadful, but it was a lovely idea, so we're going to give you first. It doesn't work like that. I mean, I'm sure it was delicious, and it was a nice idea. I just thought it lacked visual appeal. And as we say so often, we can only judge on what it looks like. And we trust the judges to say how great the flavour is. And I just for me, it just fell short, especially with Dan's being so stunning, and George's and Carol's. You know, Amelia's did look very sort of 1960s. I think Prue said it looked old-fashioned. It was definitely something my dad would have decorated like that. Well, he would. My dad was a very, very good cake decorator, I would say. Yeah, it just fell a little bit flat for me, Sophie's, and I'm sure it was delicious, and I don't suppose for one moment I'm ever going to make a Russian honey cake, because I certainly couldn't make lots of those thin layers or be bothered, but it just felt a little bit flat, and I don't want to be all scroogey about it, but...
Well, I think there is a solution, actually, So we've talked about Doctor Who, haven't we, and alternative universes. So what Jane can do is loan Dan her cake stand, and you could at least do a selfie with it of what might have been. Yeah.
Jane thought I should win this. Yes. There we go. I'd be very happy.
But you know what? Listen, listen. Anyone who enters any kind of competition would like to win it. You know, we'd all like to win. And, you know, yes, I'm a little bit sad that I didn't win. But the most important thing for me is just going back and doing a good job and being happy with what I made.
And having fun.
And yeah, and I did do that. And I think, you know, that people always think that when you get sent home for the bake-off, you're gutted to be leaving. But for me, and I don't know if it was the same with you, Howard, it wasn't so much the fact that I was leaving. It was the fact that I felt like I'd done a bad job. And that was what I felt bad about. It wasn't the fact that, you know you might get sent home at some point, but the fact that you do a bad job is kind of embarrassing and it's not a nice feeling. Mm. But I feel like even though I didn't win, I feel like I did a good job and I'm happy with what I made. And, you know, even the pies that they didn't like, I liked them. And I know that sounds like like an excuse, but but I still like them. And I don't think I would have done it differently because those are what I like. So I'm still happy, you know, with what happened, even if I didn't win. Curse you, Sophie.
Was your hotel nice? Did you have a nice week?
It was a nice hotel, but the hotel had a swimming pool, but they didn't tell us, so I didn't bring my swimming costume with me. I know. What a waste of time. I could have had a swim.
Missed opportunity.
It was very pleasant, though. There were weddings there both days.
Oh,
yeah. What, in the snow?
In winter?
Yes, in the dead of winter, Jane. In the dead of winter.
Yes, it was very, very, very effective. Snow on the ground. Yeah. Yes, very good. Well, on that lovely note, I think that's perfect to just round up this podcast then. As you might have gathered, Dan didn't win. Boo.
Oh,
oh, boo. Proper pantomime booing there. The lovely Sophie won. She defended her title and she got Star Baker. She'd had a fantastic signature and technical challenge. And maybe if her showstopper was a little visually under maybe what we'd expect of Sophie, apparently it was absolutely fantastic and delicious. And Dan, I think you were a very worthy runner-up. So well done.
Well, as I say to my son, you know, it's not that kind of competition. There's one person wins and everyone else is second. You know, like I was happy to have done a good job. But, you know, I don't think we want to start ranking everyone who didn't win.
You were second.
You were definitely second.
You were
definitely.
Yeah.
This is a sign of Dan that I have never seen, actually. Normally he's just so out there, and today he's being very modest and warm and generous to everybody. You were definitely second, Dan.
Okay, fine.
I think we all are when we get judged, because we like to think we're fantastic, and when there's sort of an edge that we might be joking, it's like, yeah, we're great, and then somebody says, no, it was really good, and you go, oh, thanks.
Yeah,
little of me.
That's very true.
Well, thank you so much, Dan, especially for going back through that. It must be very, very bizarre to watch yourself on television, but then to come and talk about it on a podcast as well. Very strange.
How self-involved am I?
Yeah. I know, God. But thank you so much, Dan, Howard and Jane, for joining me for this lovely Christmas podcast to go along with the Christmas Bake Off episode. And thank you to all our lovely listeners as well. We will be back for the New Year's episode, which we are very, very excited to do. And we will see you very, very soon. Have a great festive holiday. Merry Christmas, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Merry Christmas. Bye.
Merry Christmas.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.